now listening to the Paul McGuire Report. This is Paul McGuire. On today's program, I want to give you a global strategic update regarding what is happening with the intersection of the United States of America, nations like Canada, the European Union and NATO, China, Russia, the Ukraine, Iran, Iraq, and numerous other nations. Now, what makes this a particularly volatile situation is the fact that the majority of the nations on planet Earth right now are either directly or indirectly involved in the potential of some kind of World War III scenario, a global World War III scenario. And that's the center of the scenario is a global World War III. But revolving from the core of that are all kinds of spin-offs in terms of the global food supply, energy supply, the expansion of the military-industrial complex, not just in the United States of America, but globally, because whatever nation begins to build up its arsenal, you can be sure that other nations, in order to be competitive in terms of their projected survival, they're going to build up their arsenal or arsenals. So on one hand, we have the United States of America building up its arsenal or arsenals. On the other hand, we have Russia and China building up its arsenals. Why? Well, it's obvious. To be competitive, to attempt to achieve some kind of what the U.S. military calls full-spectrum dominance. And I write about full-spectrum dominance in my books like A Prophecy of the Future of America, Volume 1 and 2, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, and Power from on High. Full-spectrum dominance is something I've been covering for years, because it's an essential military doctrine, if you will, of the U.S. military, and whatever global military force arises from that. So, for example, an example, no pun intended, of that would be the growth, the spending of massive sums of monies, the not de-escalation, the escalation of modern military weapons, modern military technologies that many of them have been around since the 40s or earlier. But the public is just beginning to get a little glimpse, a little burst of light in their consciousness. The people have finally decided to wake up to whatever degree. Now, in terms of a military doctrine, and purely speaking within a military context versus speaking from a theological context or a biblical context, because those are two different things. If you're speaking from purely a biblical context, then you have factors that theoretically should override the doctrine of full-spectrum dominance. Full-spectrum dominance is the military belief system which believes that in order to have peace, stability, prevent war, keep your economy going, et cetera, in order to achieve those factors, which could be called survival, in order to achieve those factors, you have to achieve what is called full-spectrum dominance. And full-spectrum dominance, as I explain in great detail in my books, full-spectrum dominance is simply the concept that in any war, a war is always divided up into various and different compartments. or you could say a war is divided up into various and different spectrums. So for the sake of this discussion, we're going to use the terms spectrums and compartments interchangeably. So let's just throw out a few of the common and prioritized military spectrums or compartments. The food supply, the ability to produce food to feed your population, and the ability to transport your food economically, the ability to grow your food, the ability to feed your people during times of war, etc. All of this would encompass the spectrum of the food supply. So the food supply is one of the most critical components or most critical spectrums in any potential of war. And looking at it through a military perspective, survival, raw survival, is contingent upon being able to maintain control of or being able to dominate the spectrum of food, food production, food transportation, the growing or manufacturing of food, contingency plans on food, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one spectrum. Another spectrum more recently, in terms of its emergence, would be the Space Force. So outer space, or the highest atmosphere of our planet, where we have both manned satellites and unmanned satellites, and international space stations and so on, and lengthy discussions and plans, and all kinds of talk about transportation to planets like Mars, all the way to Elon Musk's dream of the eventual colonization of Mars, where you would have, you know, something like 40,000 people permanently living in an artificial atmosphere on the planet Mars, and there would be a number of reasons for that. One would be to be able to gather minerals and rare substances and then send them back to Earth via rocket. Another would be the military defense and potential extraterrestrial invader defense that might make the colonization of Mars a necessity. So you've seen pictures of these super cities planned for construction on Mars. They're like geodesic domes. And they have the ability to create their own human-sustaining, life-sustaining, livable atmosphere on the planet Mars. And the ability to build massive underground structures on Mars, where you could increase the housing capacity from 40,000 to, let's say, 400,000 or something like that. So that would be the colonization of planets, the maintaining of military bases on numerous planets, the plans for developing both the technology and developing the inhabitability of military bases and manned colonies on Mars and other nations. That would fall under the umbrella of the Space Force and fall under the umbrella of manned space travel and the colonization of other planets like Mars and the militarization and the building of bases on different planets. And so this was something that was in the realm of science fiction movies until relatively recently. But now, I mean, you can see the 3D structures that depict what scientists and people like Musk envision as building viable cities above ground and underground on places like the planet Mars. And then along with that, of course, would go looking for evidence of life on the planet Mars. So two spectrums. Another spectrum would be energy, huge spectrum or compartment, because whatever you think about our energy problem, we need to have energy that's efficient, that's powerful, that's inexpensive, that we can control, that we can manufacture, that we can transport, because like it or not, we live in an energy-driven, energy-dependent nation and society, whether it's oil, whether it's gas, whether it's nuclear, whether it's solar or whatever it is, we are energy dependent. Our civilization is dependent on the massive sources of energy. Now, I'm going to add one that I've never read in a military report. I'm going to add a couple that are not traditionally included in military analysis and military reports, but they remain extremely important. So if we take, for example, different compartments or different assets or different spectrums that are vital to living, to prospering, to thriving, and to achieving some kind of military dominance, then that military dominance is referred to, by the way, as you know if you've read my books, it's referred to as full spectrum dominance. The idea is you dominate every spectrum or every potential military battlefield. And that's how you win and stay ahead of the game in terms of a global conflict, full spectrum dominance. Okay, but the area of the human intellect, the area of the human knowledge and research, the area of the ability to develop cutting edge technology, the ability to conceptualize, invent, create, and engineer all kinds of technologies and sciences that previously did not exist, but now nations which have financed, nations which have empowered, nations which have cultivated a kind of national dominance in these critical areas have discovered that areas that were once considered esoteric or, you know, frivolous, like creativity, the cultivation of the human imagination, the cultivation of the ability to all kinds of entrepreneur abilities. Well, when you analyze them in great depth, like the CIA does, you discover that our nation's capacity to harness the mass intellectual capacities of its people, making sure that its people have a biological mental framework, a biological mental foundation upon which they can create, conceptualize, invent, develop cutting-edge sciences, cutting-edge technologies. See, that at one time that was considered almost like frivolous, but we now live in an age where it is absolutely essential to view all of that in the context of full spectrum dominance. So, for example, as I've written in my book, A Prophecy of the Future of America, Volume 1 and 2, China for quite a while was in great danger. They had a massive military army. They had massive funding and all kinds of things. But one area where China and other communist nations were desperately lacking was in the area of developing or cultivating a mass mindset from within their own people, developing and cultivating a mass mindset in which their citizens could invent, create, become entrepreneurs, discover new technologies, not just steal technologies from America, invent new rockets and computer systems. So the mental, intellectual, creative capacity to achieve and innovate all kinds of advanced technology, especially in things like artificial intelligence and biological engineering, et cetera, et cetera. And the creation of entirely new economic sectors and new businesses. This entire spectrum of what we could call entrepreneurship, creativity, innovation, engineering, all of this, whether we want to admit it or not, all of this is already weaponized. Like it or not, it becomes a weapon and it's weaponized. So AI, even though not originally invented as a weapon, AI is weaponized. And so the nation that leads the world in terms of the development and the creation of cutting-edge AI is the nation that dominates the AI spectrum. Same with entrepreneurship. So what the Chinese discovered, and I write about this in my book, which you need to read, by the way. I write about this in my book, A Prophecy of the Future of America, Volume 1 and 2. I wrote about very upper-level think tank studies, which revealed that internally, the communist Chinese government, their scientists, their engineers, their culture, that they collectively were very, very concerned about what they perceived to be a massive handicap in their own people. So that the communist Chinese perceived that their people, due to the fact that their people were indoctrinated and socially engineered within a socialist, communist, Marxist state, and along with that goes communist, Marxist, socialist thinking, because of those factors, the ability for the average Chinese citizen to develop advanced computer systems and software and artificial intelligence and rockets and to invent and to create cutting-edge technologies and sciences in everything from mental telepathy, cognition, et cetera, et cetera. But the Chinese began to realize that their people, the downside of raising people in a communist environment is that you are inadvertently dumbing them down. You are inadvertently socially engineering them to operate at lower capacities than, let's say, America or Europe or nations like that. And that there's a direct relationship between political freedom, idea freedom, creative freedom, and freedom of scientific abilities, technological inventions, freedom to build businesses, to raise capital, to grow market share, et cetera, et cetera. See, the world is interlocked. And so they are now trying to address that by retraining their people. But they actually, in many respects, regress their people by artificially imposing onto their people archaic thinking systems which regress them and slowed them down from becoming entrepreneurs, innovators, inventors, creators, and so on and so forth. You see how that works? So the spectrum of dominance we're talking about, a very important spectrum, is that a nation must make sure that it is doing everything it can to cultivate an intellectual culture of scientists, inventors, thinkers, advanced mathematicians, creative people, that they're producing masses of creative geniuses and engineering geniuses and entrepreneurial and marketing geniuses. It's essential. And so this isn't just some arbitrary area of life. This is a critical factor in understanding and implementing full spectrum dominance. And it's a life or death matter. So, for example, in the movie Oppenheimer, and I was, like I told you, I was reading all about Oppenheimer when I was in third grade. I read all the biographies and stuff on him at the local public library. But Oppenheimer and other scientists like him, when you look at their lives, they all grew up in a similar intellectual, creative, cultural environment. So Oppenheimer and Einstein and Enrico Fermi and all these other physicists and mathematicians, and of course Oppenheimer was the father of the H-bomb or the nuclear bomb, and they were in a race to beat Nazi Germany and Russia by inventing the nuclear bomb first. And that invention of the nuclear bomb first, and depicted in the movie Oppenheimer, gave us, at that time, full spectrum dominance and full military superiority over our enemies in the form of nuclear weapons. But when you look at the formative psychological environments of these physicists and scientists and advanced engineers and high-level scientists in the study of radioactivity and nuclear materials, etc., you see that they all came, or the majority of them came from, let's call them Western environment households, which emphasized things like the development of classical musical abilities, because classical musical abilities enhance intelligence. Classical intelligence abilities, like playing classical piano and the violin, etc., the more you expose your mind to that kind of input, the more neurological pathways or neurological highways you create in the body, soul, and spirit. Thus, the byproduct of immersing yourself in learning and training and playing and performing classical music and visual art, or the writing of literature, great literature, collectively they produce a culture which automatically produces outstanding performance in what we would call the full spectrum dominant areas. So the physicists, they built nasty, ugly, horrible weapons, but we survived. And that comes from being raised in families where classical music, classical art, classical literature, classical history was cultivated and taught, and these children were all hyper-educated. And I understand that because I grew up in such a family and in such an environment in New York City. And what it does doesn't mean you're better than anybody else, but you are, without realizing it, you are saturating or programming your mind with a vast increase in neurological pathways and neurological highways that automatically give you the ability to think on far higher levels than many other people. Now this is not a racial put down, because the white culture has the same problem, and I know, because I grew up, let's say, in a dual culture. So on one hand, I was saturated with classical music and classical literature and thinking and stuff. But on the other hand, I was listening to the Rolling Stones and other music forms of rock and roll that essentially dumb you down. Now, hip hop, you can say that's racist. I don't care what you say. Hip hop and rap, just like white people's rock and roll, hip hop and rap produce, they lower the neurological pathways and highways. And thus, they reduce intelligence. And thus, they don't produce a culture of physicists and advanced biologists and high-level thinkers. Now, I know that's a touchy area and people don't want to hear it, but it's the truth. And if a Christian parent or a Christian leadership. If you want, this is not a matter of what you like and what you don't like. And a lot of people don't want to eat healthy food, but it'll keep you alive. If you want to develop children of excellence and leadership and who have all kinds of extraordinary abilities, then you have to create an environment for them to be exposed to higher level thinking, classical music, classical literature, visual painting, art, and creativity, because that is like a super starter engine to advanced thinking and quantumly increasing your brain power. Okay, so in summary, we would have, if somebody was looking at our nation today rationally, and it is irrational to look at our nation in a global sense, because the only person that benefits from a globalist international system are the very trillionaire elite, the super wealthy. We are now seeing in America, due to the media, the mass dumbing down of our children, the intellectual and creative degradation of our children in the area of sexual education, styles of music, the curriculum, which teaches not the truth of history, but historical revisionism. And those methodologies of education, educational training, creative development, analysis, etc., in all those areas which rely on communist style, socialist style, and Marxist styles of educational development, what they're really doing is very short-sighted, because they are actually dumbing down many generations of young Americans. They're dumbing them down, and they're cultivating and creating young people whose thinking and logical and critical thinking and creative capacities are being artificially regressed, because you're programming millions and millions of children in the European Union and America. You're programming. See, you want to dumb them down. Let's expose it for what it is. The reality is that the elite want to dumb down your children and dumb down the children, because dumbed down children become compliant worker bees that can't think. They can do manual labor. They can work hard, but basically they're manual worker bees that will follow orders, not question, not think for themselves, and therefore they will have great difficulty expressing their individuality in becoming entrepreneurs. But that's what the elite want. They want an intellectually sedated series of generations that they can control with bioelectric technology. And they want to control these millions of young people as if they were machines. And that's not good, because those type of children cannot create, they can't become entrepreneurs, they can't invent. And so, without realizing it, the elite, in their greed and selfishness, which knows no boundaries, the elite are purely thinking about how they can enrich their power and their control in the immediate short term. And so if that means essentially lobotomizing generations of young children with bad nutrition, with ADD-type entertainment and music and thinking patterns. In other words, you're literally, intentionally waging war against the human mind. And your God has created the human mind with an enormous capacity. But the globalist elite, who are Luciferian, they do not want our children to be able to tap into the enormous capacity of the human mind. They want our children to be dumbed down and to become the slaves of the globalist elite, non-questioning, non-thinking slaves who will simply obey orders. That's the future they have in mind. And so it's obvious we're at the very end juncture of the crossroads of human civilization, because once you program a number of generations and you program them to be stupid, to be compliant, there's no going back. The torch of knowledge and understanding will be passed on to another nation. So full spectrum dominance, you see, starts out as merely a military doctrine, but it ends up being a sociological, economic, creative, technological, and scientific doctrine by default. Okay, you're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. Be sure to visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. And we will be back in just a moment. Remember, knowledge is power. And if you acquire knowledge, you're going to acquire power, according to the Bible. If you have no knowledge, you will acquire stupidity. And the Bible says that the fool is the slave to the wise man. It's said slightly differently, but that's essentially what it means. This is Paul McGuire. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. You are now listening to the Paul McGuire Report. Again, back to our analysis of the global situation, the military doctrine, spoken or unspoken, of full spectrum dominance here in the United States and across the world. So where is all of this going? Well, we have the conflict between the Ukraine and Russia. And the conflict between the Ukraine and Russia is a conflict that is being fueled by hidden or somewhat covert financial sources. As everyone knows, there's a lot of money to be made in warfare. And this is something that has been an historical fact since the beginning of time. In my book, The Day the Dollar Died, I talk about this in great detail. Wall Street and the international bankers, they were very much behind World War I and then World War II. The international bankers, which would be synonymous with the globalist elite or the 1% trillionaire, billionaire class that rules planet Earth, they can make a lot of money. They can make more money in warfare and military conflict than just about any other industry. So whether it's the manufacturing of weapons, the manufacturing of weapon system, the raising up of military forces, the amount of money spent on those kinds of endeavors is just beyond human comprehension. So we have a very dangerous factor here in Europe, in America, in Russia, in China, the European Union, and that is we have a global economic crisis. And having a global economic crisis means that our monetary system, which I wrote all about in my book, The Day the Dollar Died, our monetary system is essentially built and controlled by a globalist elite, which lends money to governments and other entities. They lend money that they print from nothing, and then they charge amazing interest rates on the loans of the money that they have lent to other nations like the United States, etc. Now, the problem with that, It's a card game of deceit. In fact, you could call it simply the world system, the world economic system, or the world financial system. And it's not an accident that the time period that we're living in, with the advent of wireless electronic currency, and we're not, you know, The whole idea of people being injected with a hidden microchip implant about the size of a grain of rice, and part of this tiny tube is red and the other part is translucent. There have been so many thousands of repeated images from episodic TV to TV shows to movies, etc., where that image has been burned into the minds of hundreds of millions of people all around the world. I was watching a movie with Denzel Washington last night called Safe House. And Denzel Washington plays kind of a rogue CIA agent. And he has to take out of his arm the proverbial microchip implant. Now, when I first started writing books and talking about the microchip implant, the reaction was, especially among Christians, was always hostile. And inevitably, they were in total denial and said, you know, that's not true, that this technology isn't there, and blah, 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 blah. Well, that's totally incorrect. Just watching the movies and the episodic TV and the TV shows, the amount of times you'll see in a video for so-called entertainment purposes, the repetitive exposure that you'll see of a microchip implant being taken out of somebody's arm or by their neck or whatever, usually picked out by tweezers, because it has information which a spy is trying to smuggle or whatever. So the reality of a microchip implant is not even remotely far-fetched. Through repetition of the imagery, several generations of children and now several generations of adults have seen visual pictures and video of these microchip implants so often and so repeatedly that it through repetition, it has become subconsciously kind of like a new normal in their mind. So it's not like when I first started writing books and I was one of the relatively few authors, especially in the Christian world, people didn't write on it. They didn't talk about it because they were afraid and they didn't do their homework. Well, I early on began writing about it, speaking about it, and talking about it as if it was a reality because I knew it was a reality. And this reality has been reinforced by the fact that it's been seen in a constant stream of movies and episodic TV, et cetera, et cetera. So it has become a fixture in the human consciousness. Now, since I started writing about that, the microchip implant, all of that technology has gone through several successive revolutions, or should I say several successive evolutions. So now we're not talking about a microchip implant about the size of a grain of rice embedded under the skin and delivered via a hypodermic needle. What we're talking about is a new kind of microscopic wireless technology, the kind of technology referred to in the Vax, which could be at first microscopic, but it's a self-evolving technology, and it goes from like sub-microscopic, and it begins to grow. And so what it is, it's a self-evolving nanobot. So that concept hasn't fully sunk into the consciousness of people around the world. They don't yet have a fix on that in their minds. They still think of it like the grain of rice with wireless technology. But what it really is it starts out as something vastly smaller than a grain of rice. It's something microscopic, and it is powered through external electromagnetic frequency energy, and it functions as both a transmitter and a broadcaster, and it is so much tinier than the microchip implant. So this new technology, which is really nanotechnology, and it functions on essentially the same electromagnetic frequency spectrum that 5G cell technology runs on. And then once it goes into the human body and bloodstream, etc., it begins to very quickly grow, feeding off not only the electromagnetic frequency energy from external sources, but it feeds off, apparently, nutrients, so-called nutrients in the human bloodstream. Okay, so I was writing about the global currency in my book, The Day the Dollar Died, which came out in 2009. And I talked about the fact that in the book of Revelation. They talked about a one world government, a one world religion, and a one world economic system. Now, that was also called the New World Order. That term, the New World Order, and the one world economic system, the one world religion, and the one world government, that is no longer the name of this beast system which is rising all around us. The name, they've gotten rid of the New World Order name, and they have exchanged it for a name which they call the Great Reset. But the Great Reset is the exact same thing as the New World Order, because the Great Reset is designed to create a wireless electronic currency, and it's designed to create a one-world economic system, a one-world religion, and a one-world government. But it is simply not called the New World Order anymore. It's called the Great Reset. Okay, so this wireless currency, which the Bible refers to as the mark of the beast, is something which is spreading around the world. And it's a global currency. Now, because of what's happening on a global level with all the crisis points on planet Earth, like food, like these mass pandemics, mass unemployment, the very, very real threat of artificial intelligence replacing human beings in the job market. That is not a paranoiac fantasy. That's not like somebody getting scared over a ghost. The fact of the matter is that there are so many employment sectors and so many jobs where a human being could be replaced by a robot or artificial intelligence of some kind, that you could literally, without missing a beat, wipe out, 50% or more of the available jobs and occupations available to people. And people, by the hundreds of millions, could be replaced through artificial intelligence and robots and similar technologies. And so this is creating a very real economic threat to the nations of the world and to the economic systems of the world. It is making them very fragile. And when nations become very fragile, and nations are controlled by banks and financial lending institutions, what you have is a recipe for a potential disaster. So the backdrop of what's happening between the Ukraine and Russia, or Russia and the EU, just today before doing research for the Paul McGuire Report, I was reading about all these articles which talked about very high-level leaders, either in the military or as economic leaders or as prime ministers and presidents of large nations, and they're especially the European Union nations, they're all concerned about Russia and the potential of Russia threatening to invade Europe, the potential of Russia invading Great Britain, the potential of Russia invading Germany and many other nations. And at the same time, you have these very powerful leaders getting up before the media and the microphones of the media and threatening Russia, threatening to retaliate with nuclear weapons, threatening to invade Russia with physical armies, threatening to engage Russia on a military level. Now, it's one thing to conduct political rhetoric and make threats, but the fact of the matter is Russia, as it is now, is an extremely, extremely powerful nation militarily. Russia has been, while most of the nations in the world, like America and Europe, etc., while they have been disarming themselves and neglecting the financing of their militaries, Russia has been steadily investing in growing their military, manufacturing and producing and developing the latest weapon systems And so Russia is a formidable adversary with state-of-the-art weaponry. I was reading an article of, I think they're the F-35 jets that the Russians have. And these jets are not only very, very fast jets, but they these jets carry a very powerful nuclear payload. And so they're both jets and nuclear missiles, and they're deadly. And if they were to be fired anywhere in the world, and if a button was pressed and they detonated the nuclear material, they would detonate nukes all over the world or in the European Union or anywhere that they chose. So this is a volatile environment, and it involves not just America, but crisis all over the world. Now, again, the backdrop of all of this is that on a global level, the national economies are linked together. But in addition to that, when it comes to nations like the U.S., Britain, France, Canada, Germany, and other nations, we're all in business with nations like South Korea, China, Japan, Australia, India, Sweden, Mexico, and even Russia and Israel. However, this de facto global currency and de facto global economic system is very fragile, and the European Union is pushing with a great deal of aggression. It's pushing Russia. It's provoking Russia, and you have to ask yourself why. Well, the reason why is that there are the international globalist banking families, and they want to make money, and they want to expand their power, and they, or at least a percentage of them, are interested in stirring up a military conflict or a war or a series of battles with Russia. In other words, this globalist elite has a desire to engage Russia and some of the related nations in all-out military conflict, which would include Russia invading certain European Union nations with ground troops, Russia firing nukes and missiles at certain European Union nations. And then simultaneously, you have major leaders in these European nations threatening to reciprocate and fire nukes at Russia and send troops from, let's say, Germany. One of the heads of the German military has openly threatened in the last week to send in specially trained German troops into Russia, into the area of the Ukraine, in this appears to be rather an insane attempt to engage Russia militarily. So this is serious stuff, and it's not stuff that the danger here is it's like lighting a fuse. And what World War I showed us and what World War II showed us was that once you light the fuse towards a global war or a global nuclear war, and once that conflict begins, it can begin rather quickly, it can erupt rather quickly, but it becomes very, very difficult to contain it. Once you let the genie out of the bottle, so to speak, it becomes very difficult to get it back in the bottle. And we are precariously pressing the world, pressing the armies of the world and the technology of the world. There is a tremendous amount of pressure coming from the globalist elite to literally start, some people say, to start a World War III scenario. And in the long run, that may make a lot of money for certain corporations, but World War III is not a good scenario for human beings, for people, for families, for children, or anything like it. War is absolutely brutal. The cost is intolerable. And we need to, pray for our nation, stand up and get involved, become aware of what's happening, because what's happening on the level of an emergency alert. I mean, World War III is not a game. World War III could, you know, they have said many times, the globalist elite, that high on their list of goals, they have now estimated that the population of planet Earth is about 8 billion people. And the globalist elite, they're into euthanasia, the decimation of the elderly and the sick, etc., in order to radically reduce the world's population. So if the world's population is 8 million now, which they consider way, way too high, and the thinkers and the leaders and the intellectual leaders behind the Great Reset, behind the New World Order, have talked for years and years and years about the danger of excessive population growth and the threat of excessive population growth. They've talked about it for years. Now, we had the vaccine, which killed a lot of people. And so it marginally made a dent in excessive population. But a World War III scenario in which nukes go off and then the fallout of radiation and then the dismantling of the food chains and all the other repercussions from a World War III scenario. Now you're talking about a major human catastrophic event in which this eight billion people who compromise the total population figure of planet Earth. You start a World War III scenario, and you could potentially have billions of people die. Now that those numbers are staggering to even remotely contemplate. But World War III, nuclear weapons, biological weapons, chemical weapons, nations invading nations, they all create the environment, a death-like environment in which billions of people could be killed. And when you read the writings of the thinkers and the intellectuals behind the New World Order, behind the Fabian Socialists, the Huxley brothers, and others, they openly call for biological warfare, nuclear warfare, global warfare of all kinds. They openly call for it, and they openly call for it as a means to radically reduce the world's population in the fastest amount of time. And so this is a very, very serious, I mean, these are words that we shouldn't be playing with, and Christians spiritually should be on high alert. They should be completely aware of what is potentially happening, and they need to play their part or their play their role in this spiritually with prayer and being and shining light in the darkness, because World War III under any circumstances would create a death machine where billions would die. And that is really unacceptable and unthinkable. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. We'll be back in just a moment. The big question that we need to ask ourselves, and this is a question that we need to ask ourselves immediately, because the transformation, the changes that are happening in our nation and world really are occurring at lightning speed. Now, if you're not aware of what's going on, you're basically the equivalent of a sitting duck. You're a target waiting to be taken out. So let's ask ourselves the big question. COVID. What was COVID? What was the purpose? What was the hidden agenda behind the COVID crisis? I mean, because whatever COVID was, it was nothing like we were told it was by the media and the so-called experts. So was COVID nothing more than a strategy, a globalist strategy for triggering a multi-trillion dollar global debt and a strategy for expanding not old-fashioned capitalism, but expanding ruthless capitalism? Is that what it was all about in the end or the beginning? A lot of things were implemented during the COVID crisis like lockdowns and walking in step and stuff like that. And all of that, all of those things, by the way, as you know, are forms of social conditioning and mass mind control. So we do know that COVID, among other things, was a dry run for mass conditioning and social control in the United States and across the world. In other words, it was a trial for mass mind control, which, by the way, mass mind control is just a quicker way of saying an electronic totalitarian digital dictatorship, because that's what came. And that's what we're dealing with now. So if you're oblivious to that reality, then you fit into the category of a sitting duck. Okay. So what else? In an article written by Colin Todd Hunter in the Global Research Institute, he outlines a number of things that he believes were triggered by the COVID crisis, which is a global debt crisis. And he quotes, of all people, the father, or one of the fathers of communism, Frederick Engels. And this is what Frederick Engels said in 1845. You might find it interesting. Quote, "And thus it renders more and more evident the great central fact that the cause of the miserable condition of the working class is to be sought not in these minor grievances, but in the capitalist system itself." Now, I'm not a communist. I've never been a communist. In fact, I'm an anti-communist. But there are things that Frederick Engels said in a book he wrote called The Condition of the Working Class in England in 1845, where he exposes inherent problems in a raw capitalist system. Now, you can cheer capitalism on all you want. I cheer capitalism on. But in the end, ruthless, secularist, godless capitalism is every bit as evil as godless, ruthless communism. Because in both of those systems, they do not believe in the Judeo-Christian God. They do not believe in biblical principles. And so there is no system of authentic accountability in place to rein these people in, to keep them from doing evil. And that's what's happening right now, and it's impacting the United States and every nation on earth. The IMF, part of the United Nations. The World Bank, again, part of the United Nations. And the IMF means, of course, International Monetary Fund. They have been aggressively pushing and promoting for decades different agendas that demand. Now, these are your friendly globalist elites, okay? They have been pushing all these programs which demand that there are to be radical cuts in an entire spectrum of public services, the kinds of services that keep people alive. So, for example, basic food distribution, basic ability to have basic housing, basic protection, basic medical care. We're talking about just the bottom platform of survival, or the ability to survive, needs to be made available to people. But you see, right now we're in a global economic crisis, and they're looking to cut what they consider to be unnecessary expenditures. So they're cutting medical, they're cutting food, they're cutting housing, they're cutting everything that the working class, middle class, workers, teachers, farmers, salespeople, truck drivers, they're cutting everything that keeps the average American and whatever nation they're in alive. And these are deadly cuts. And by the way, they're soulless cuts. There's no regard for humanity. It's all about the transferring of wealth into an elite, globalist elite, God-king system. Okay?
Now, being a real Christian means you have the Holy Spirit in you, and you are not only concerned about people in your nation, but you're concerned about people in other nations. So the International Monetary Fund, an arm of the United Nations, the United Nations has pushed these policies that have resulted in 52% of Africans lacking any access to health care, and 83% having no safety nets at all to fall back on if they lose their jobs or become sick. It's over. Even the IMF has shown that neoliberal policies fuel poverty and inequality. So all these people that are running around calling themselves liberals and how compassionate they are and wanting to start all these organizations to feed the hungry and take care of the sick, that whole crowd of people are driving an agenda which destroys viciously the masses of people on planet Earth. It destroys their ability to even eke out the most minimal survival. And their programs actually drive, energize, fuel both hardcore poverty and inequality. Now, there's a famous think tank called Oxfam. In 2021, Oxfam published a report, which was a review of IMF COVID-19 loans. And it revealed that 33 African countries were encouraged to pursue austerity policies. That means, you know, tighten the belt. Don't use electricity, don't use drinking water, eat as little food as you can. That's what an austerity policy is. And so you have the world's poorest countries, and they're going to, because they have economic shackles on them, they're going to pay these poorest countries in the world, 33 African countries, are going to be forced to adopt austerity policies, and they're going to have to pay $43 billion in debt repayments in 2022. Now, if they didn't have to pay the $43 billion in debt repayments to the IMF or the globalist elite, then they would have the money to cover the costs of importing food, and they'd have the ability to survive. So, you know, like it or not, the United States of America, the European Union, and other nations, etc., we are all interlocked in the same global system, the Great Reset. And by the way, you're looking at the results of the Great Reset. The Great Reset is a soulless plan that is going to result in mass death and World War III. The CIA did a report, which I read years ago, which said one of the primary indicators of war or violence breaking out in any nation, one of the primary indicators, according to the CIA, of like World War III type setups is when the people are starving, the people don't have access to food, and the people can't get food. And according to the CIA studies, the inability to feed your family and feed yourself becomes the primary trigger that drives a nation into a World War III scenario. So if you ask me the question, which I get asked all the time, hey, Paul, do you think there's going to be a World War III? Yes, the answer is absolutely. We're sitting on the precipice of some kind of World War III, because the primary condition for World War III is when there's no food. People are starving. They're desperate. So you have that war isn't just going to break out in the 33 nations of Africa. That war is going to break out across the United States and across the world. It's going to come pouring across the border in the form of millions and millions of people who are starving and desperate. Now, America has been, for forever, really, America has been cushioned and protected from the millions of immigrants that would come across the border if they were starving and desperate. And no minimal amount of a police force or a minimal military presence is going to be able to withstand the overwhelming force of millions upon millions of people flooding across our border, starving to death, and people who are starving to death, like their children starving to death and they're starving to death. When people enter that biological condition, they go berserk. You understand what I'm saying? They go berserk in that their desperation has reached its full capacity, and then it erupts. And we have millions of people ready to rush across our border, and we are doing nothing to deal with the problem in a long-term sense, except pretend it's not there. So, yeah, World War III is right there on the border and on the horizon. And again, you got to ask yourself the question, what was the real purpose of COVID? What was the COVID thing really all about? And what the COVID thing was really all about is that it allowed for, now I'd like you to put your mind into a place where you're looking at not just needles and vaccinations and things like that, but look at the bigger, giant global picture in the U.S. and across the world. And then rethink about the implications of COVID in light of that. And this is what you come up with. It's unmistakable. COVID was a powerful signal that capitalism as we know it is in a crisis that it cannot solve. And COVID was simply capitalism masquerading, hiding itself by wearing the mask of a public health emergency. So what COVID really was a great revealing. COVID was a great revealing of the fact that we're already in, due to economics, we're already in a public health emergency. And COVID was just a glaring signal of that. Okay, so what else does this mean? In order for the capitalist economic system to work, the one that you and I most likely grew up in, there has to be certain economic laws that are operational. So, for example, capitalism must have a way of continuing to expand or continuing to create new markets. In other words, capitalism, in order for capitalism to feed people, provide jobs, and a higher standard of living, capitalism must grow in terms of markets, profits, the accumulation of capital. And then capitalism has to be able to accumulate a constant stream of new wealth. And in order to do this, capitalism needs to be able to reinvest itself in new products, new services, new companies, new inventions, in order for capitalism to continue to grow economies and in order to continue to make further profits. So in order for capitalism to work, economies cannot be stagnant. Economies must be in a growth mode. So this is what the big super capitalists, your political leaders do, my political leaders do, the heads of these giant corporations, the trillionaire boys and girls, the globalist elite, this is what they do historically when capitalism stops growing. Okay. The capitalist super elite, again, need to be able to constantly accumulate wealth in order to make further profits. So in order to make further profits, one of the basic capital axioms of capitalism and making money is that in order to be able to continue to produce profits, you have to continually increase the amount of money you're bringing in from your products or services, but at the same time, you have to be able to continually place or exert downward pressure, must be placed on all the people that work for a living. In other words, downward economic pressure has to be placed on teachers and firemen and policemen and salespeople and investment counselors and doctors and dentists and truck drivers and soldiers. You name the job. When wealth stops coming in, when profit stops coming in, the only way you can keep the ball bouncing again is you have to find a way to continue to bring in more money, more profit, even if there isn't any apparent profit to be had, even if there isn't any more money to be had, you have to bring it in or the system collapses. And so what always happens is external downward pressure is placed on everybody's pay, their jobs, the amount of their salaries, their pensions are cut, everything you would call workers' income, workers' salary, investments, retirement, all of that stuff must be subjected to downward pressure. Everything has to be cut. All costs are cut. And any capitalist business owner will tell you the number one cost in any business or corporation, the number one cost is the salaries, the fees, and the employment costs that they have to pay in order to generate business. And so in a pure capitalist system, like it or not, you have to find a way to cut costs. This is why in this wonderful globalist society we were seduced into supporting decades ago, in this wonderful globalist society, remember 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they were promoting the heck out of globalism, global trade treaties. And the reason for that was these super capitalists, these super elite and wealthy individuals could see down the road and they could see that all hell was going to break loose and their corporations would collapse in the global market if they were not able to continue to manufacture their products and services at a cheaper cost than their competition. And their competition would be these third world nations like communist China or Russia or you name it. All of those nations had an advantage over the United States. All of those nations were able to manufacture their goods, build their products, create their services at a far, far lower cost than companies could in America. So what did the companies do in America? Well, you know what they did. They ruthlessly picked up and transferred the majority of their manufacturing plants, their businesses, their services, their company headquarters were ruthlessly transferred into third world nations where they could pay for labor and manufacturing and buildings and everything else at a little fraction of the cost it would cost them to continue to manufacture their products and services in America. Nobody wants, the politicians not only fumbled the ball, your politicians dropped the ball, and they dropped the ball intentionally because they were paid under the table with all kinds of bribes and payoffs and, you know, big money financial incentives. The politicians that were supposed to be doing the will of the American people pretended not to see the disaster that was happening, and they shut their eyes to the fact that there was an exodus of manufacturing jobs and goods and services jobs and production jobs of all kinds. Those companies were moving in a giant exodus out of the United States of America and resetting up shop all over the world so they could manufacture stuff at a far, far lower price. Now, this made all the stockholders happy who cared only about one thing. Show me the money. I want to see a profit. I'm investing in your company because you've told me I can get a profit on my money. All of these things, you know, are in their context, legitimate needs and desires. The problem is when you build your entire society on a kind of soulless economic capitalism, you create a system, a soulless system, which in which people are only driven to make money by any means necessary. And so the end result always is that the manufacturing, the jobs, the corporations, and the businesses, they begin to flee like rats from a sinking ship, and they go to places like Korea, or they went initially to Japan and then China and now the South American countries, so they can make their products, grow their vegetables and fruits far cheaper than they could in the United States of America. Now, what happens next? What happens next is that the rate of profits come crashing down. The amount of money that these globalist corporations could potentially bring in is also crashing. But on top of that, you have, and I've been talking about this for years on the radio, this subject right here, I have been talking about on the radio since the first day I was on the radio. I talked to all my guest experts. Very few people were thinking about this. Very few people were concerned about this, including the politicians I interviewed and the guest experts. But what I asked them essentially was variations of this question. Don't these corporations, don't these CEOs understand that when, because of their globalist plotting and plans and selling us down the river and having all our manufacturing jobs shipped overseas, don't they understand that this is going to cause the average wages and salaries and working pay and pensions? Don't they understand that this is going to explode and detonate in the wallet and the personal bank accounts of your average American? And very quickly, your average American will be able to make less and less profit and money. Pensions will be cut. Jobs will shut down. Abilities to generate future incomes will be impacted. And then you're not going to have prosperity. All these big companies, you know, the big car companies, you drive around California and you would think California people were rich. They're not rich. They're just in debt. Everywhere you go, and I'm not knocking you if you're driving a Ford F-250 or an SUV or whatever, fine. But you see, don't be fooled into thinking that all these people driving these big expensive cars are actually flying high financially, because they're not. They're doing it by debt. Okay, but this is what I kept asking all the CEOs and other guests. When the American people can no longer qualify financially in terms of their debt scores, in terms of how much money they have to spend, when all of a sudden the average American's income is substantially cut, they can't make their housing payments, they're having trouble making food payments, energy payments, when the average American begins to actually feel the economic squeeze and they can't generate the additional income they need, guess what? And this was to all these CEOs of all these giant businesses. All the computer companies, all the cell phone companies with the super fancy cell phones and the super fancy computers, all the big car companies with the luxury SUVs and you know, giant trucks, all of the money that the American people once had to purchase and buy these high-ticket items, including investments and retirement and pensions, all of a sudden, it's going to dry up. All of a sudden, there's not going to be anybody going down to all of these car dealerships to buy the big high-ticket trucks and the big SUVs and the luxury cars, or to buy the status symbol cars. So like in California, status symbol cars are like BMWs and Mercedes and, you know, some other things. That's fine. But we're reaching to the point, and we're not reaching, we have already arrived at the place where the average American all across the United States, the average American and the percentage of Americans that have, that now currently have the financial ability to buy the expensive luxury high ticket items, the amount of people percentage wise that can afford to do that keeps shrinking day after day and week after week. And what will happen in the immediate future, unless there are radical changes made, is that all those businesses that need those extra profits to make their profits are going to be negatively impacted, because they now are going to find themselves in a position where they've bled their customers dry. Their customers no longer have the extra money, the surplus of money. Their customers no longer have the affluence to buy these expensive items. And then you see a frenzy of cost cutting because people can't afford to buy these luxury things. And now people can't even afford to buy basic foods and other things. So you have a globalist elite secretly running everything. You have absolutely wacko economic policies that are built around curing artificial, healing the planet from a mythological problem called global warming. You have emphasis not on, there's no emphasis on jobs, training for jobs and things like that. The emphasis is on perverse sex education and stuff like that. Total insanity. And so pressures are now mounting economically and on a global level, because other nations in the world are feeling the squeeze even harder than we are in the U.S. And there are sectors of the economy that historically and throughout time, the super elite, the globalist elite, and the super wealthy have throughout time, in times of economic crisis and in times of desperate need for additional revenues, these globalist elite companies turn to one of the biggest money-making products or services that there has ever been, and that is war makes money like nothing else. War, military conflicts, the weapons industry, the building and manufacturing of biological weapons, nuclear weapons, rockets, missiles, the assembling of armies, the manufacturing of guns and bullets and jets and rockets. War is a huge business. And war, unlike other businesses, can generate hundreds of trillions of dollars, because a war machine costs massive amounts of money. And a war machine can create jobs like nothing else. People are hired in times of war. New jobs are created. Manufacturing soars as the mass weaponry of the war machine requires bullets and bombs and gas masks and now, you know, drones, and an entire high-tech technology begins to boom. And so war is perhaps mankind's greatest seduction
in a time of economic crisis. And we are in a time of economic crisis. And once again, secretly, behind the doors, not in front of the American people, because the American people won't stand for it, but behind the secret doors of power, among the economists, the military, the political class, and the other sectors of our society, there is a massive amount of secret talk about creating, artificially creating a World War III scenario, the manufacturing of high-tech weapons, the engagement in all kinds of warfare, land soldiers, navies, ships, space forces, missiles, rockets, tanks, biological, chemical, and so on and so forth. The war machine, when the war machine revs up, people get hired like crazy. And historically, the nations, including the United States of America, that were in desperate times during World War I and then in World War II, were in desperate times. Those economic recessions, those economic downturns, the Great Depression scenarios and everything else, we were able to pull ourselves radically out of these economic dangers through the old-fashioned strategy of declaring war. You look at my book, The Day the Dollar Dies, you see that war and the big money and the big loans spent on war drove economies. And so that temptation is somewhat irresistible. There's alternatives to this. You don't have to go to war, but going to war is a cheap, quick fix. And right now, the world's leaders are talking like crazy. They've got all kinds of plans. I read plans the other day of Great Britain invading parts of Russia. I read plans the other day of German special forces troops training to invade parts of Russia. I mean, this is like a nightmare list of potential possibilities. So war is definitely on the horizon. Now, it would be better for mankind and be better for mankind as a whole to embark on alternative means of building and generating income besides war. But when you have politicians and leaders and economists and militaries who all can benefit personally, they can all become enriched personally by getting a nation involved and committed in some kind of all-out World War III, that often becomes an irresistible seduction. Okay, you need to know about that. I write about that in my books, Power from On High, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. And these books will answer your question regarding, is there going to be a World War III and other topics? Remember, knowledge is power. You're not going to be surprised at what is coming down the pike if you are prepared and if you understand and are aware of the fact that the leaders of the nations of the world, they mean business. And business, war is a business. It's one of the biggest businesses that there has ever been. And these nations are very, very serious about war. And they intend to do everything they can to keep making money, keep making profits. And there's one additional thing I want to add to this that is a critical factor. And that is we now have entered the age of transhumanism and computers and artificial intelligence. Mankind has never entered that kind of age before. What that means, very bluntly, is the jobs of billions and billions of people on planet Earth are now up for grabs and are now replaceable. I mean, something like 53% or higher of all jobs on a global scale, the former human beings who would have to work, but they would get money,
who conducted these jobs, these people, these human workers by the billions are no longer necessary. Because of AI or artificial intelligence, because of robots and androids, because of computers and artificial intelligence, just about any job can be obsolete. Just about any job can be replaced by a artificially intelligent machine. And these artificially intelligent machines can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And many, many times, the artificial intelligent machine is superior in quality, productivity, precision, economic cost. They are very efficient workers. Now, the human race as a whole has never felt the global and mass threat of losing billions of jobs to robots and cyborgs and machines and computers and artificial intelligence. So there is even a deeper, deeper agenda behind the COVID and the potential of World War III as a profit mechanism. There's a deeper agenda. And the deeper agenda is you have right now a population on planet Earth of 8 billion people. You don't have 8 billion jobs for the 8 billion people. You only have a small percentage of jobs available. And so the biggest threat that multiplies all the other threats is the fact that most people's jobs are replaceable with artificial intelligence, computers, robots, cyborgs, and androids. That's the future. Now, the only way out, and this is a very simple statement, is God. There is no other way out. Don't kid yourself. We have entered an unsolvable problem for you personally, for us collectively as the human race. There is no way out of this nightmare dilemma, except if mankind and individual people will turn back to God and acknowledge God as their source. Any counterfeit to that, such as transhumanism and counterfeit human DNA and nanobots and genetic engineering, all the counterfeits to make counterfeit humans and artificial humans. This is where the rubber meets the road. For you, for me, for everybody you know and everybody I know, there are no more tricks left to play. The circus is going to come to a grinding halt. And so you have a choice. You can freak out and panic and go berserk mentally, which will do you no good at all. Or you can intelligently become educated, informed. You can intelligently and peacefully take a stand. And you can intelligently and peacefully seek the Lord while he can be found and teach others how to seek the Lord. Don't think for a moment that seeking the Lord is some cute little old-fashioned superstitious ritual. How deceived you would be if you bought into that lie. We are at literally the Armageddon of days. We are at the end of the age. It's not an accident that mankind is now being swept with a tsunami of global catastrophes that are completely out of our ability and power and knowledge to solve any of these problems. Our only Savior is Jesus Christ, and only Jesus Christ can bring us salvation, both practically and eternally. So I suggest, if you were a wise man or a wise woman, that you would begin to turn to God now, not wait till the last minute when you're sinking fast and you're in too deep. I would begin to turn to God now. America, don't kid yourself, America can't solve this problem. And you will be shell-shocked when you discover just how quickly America could go into a full-on meltdown because it can't even remotely begin to solve the problems right in front of it. And any politician or preacher or whatever that lies to you and tells you that, oh, we're going to build back better, or whatever other trivial garbage they're going to spit out of their mouths, is lying to you. We can't do what we can't do. And so our solution is the solution discovered by many great civilizations and nations throughout history, like the original nation of Israel, like the Pilgrims and Puritans and others. Now is the time for those that call themselves Christians to turn back to God and in heartfelt prayer seek the Lord and cry out to God for his mercy and for his wisdom. That is the only doorway of salvation that makes a way of escape for us. God bless you. This is Paul McGuire. I know that was a tough and sober message, but I don't apologize. Guess what? You either wake up and smell the coffee and deal with it, and that means get real with God, begin to seek God, and then do what God says. And you got to throw yourself into it. You don't put your toes into it. You go all the way with God or don't even bother. And if we do that together, we can see a turnaround. We can see God divinely intervene. So with God, it is true, all things are possible. All things are possible. Nothing is impossible with God. And the promises of God are real. They're not little fairy tales that you know, you can quote, that just float around in the air. In any case, this is the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. Pray, ask God how you can help us financially with your donations. Spread this message. Pray for me, my family, and the people working with this ministry. Pray for victory to get our message out and the dismantling of algorithms and bots and rigging machines that are targeted. And what are they targeted towards? People like me. They do not want me and others to tell you the truth. So this is Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us.